attention as the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is United States against Kump. Mr. Rogers.
May it please the court. My name is Peter Rogers. I am counsel for the appellant Josias Kump in this matter. Pursuant to the court's instructions, I will limit my comments with regard to the issue of whether my client's conduct as an armed camp guard during the Second World War constitutes personal assistance and persecution within the meaning of the Refugee Relief Act of 1953. I respectfully submit that his conduct does not constitute personal assistance and persecution for several reasons. First, based upon the plain meaning of the words personal assistance in the Refugee Relief Act. Secondly, due to the line of cases that this court has already decided. And third, because the congressional intent, as observed and suggested by the district court in the District of Massachusetts in the case of Lalikas. Furthermore, because my client's conduct was not voluntary, we also believe that that is a factor that this court must consider in determining whether he personally assisted in persecution within the meaning of the Refugee Relief Act. Your Honors, the plain meaning of personal assistance, we can look to the United States or Smith versus United States, which says when a statute, as the RRA, does not define the plain meaning of a word, we must look to its normal and ordinary meaning. And we would suggest that the normal and ordinary meaning of the words personally assist requires a certain level of conduct, a certain level of responsibility, a higher level of responsibility and involvement than does simply the word assist. For example, if I can illustrate to the court, I'm from Pennsylvania, and let's say, for example, Senator Specter calls me up and says, Mr. Rogers, I would like you to help me, I would like you to assist me in my campaign for 2006. Well, Senator Specter made that argument to me or asked me that request of me, I would understand that to mean he expects a certain level of involvement, he expects a certain level of conduct and participation in his campaign. However, I think that if Senator Specter calls me and says, Mr. Rogers, I would like you to personally assist in my campaign, I think I and almost every person in this courtroom would believe that the senator's expectations of my conduct had just changed. The senator would expect that my responsibility my level has just been raised, the level of my involvement has just been raised by using the word personal assistance instead of simply saying assist. If he just wanted me to be involved, he could say, Mr. Rogers, would you please assist me in the campaign? But when he uses the word personal assistance, I think that the common understanding of
sounds
that word...
Like the common understanding is the difference between sending your money and sending yourself. But there's no doubt that Mr. Kump sent himself.
Well, I would disagree that Mr. Kump sent himself in the sense that his service was voluntary, which we intend to address, Your Honor. Mr. Kump was forcibly conscripted into the Army at the age of 17, and we would submit that he was not he didn't send himself, Your Honor. But with the illustration, it's simply that the common understanding of those words, if personal assistance, would imply a higher level of responsibility, a higher level of involvement. In order, that would be the common understanding, I think, of most people in this courtroom. And secondly, in light of the cases that this court has already held, in the case of Karras, in the case of Schmidt, in the case of Kuhl, in the case of Shellong, in those cases, the appellants in those cases made basically identical arguments to the arguments that we're making today, arguments that some higher level of conduct is required to find. In those cases, those were decided under the Displaced Persons Act and under the Holtzman Amendment. In those cases, they argued that there's got to be more than simply being a camp guard in order to find assistance in persecution. This court rejected that argument, citing to the statute, which was the Displaced Persons Act, that says, no, the statute doesn't say there needs to be more. It says assist, and the court emphasized, and I'll quote Schmidt, because the applicable statutory provision authorized deportation of anyone who assisted in persecution, personal involvement need not be proven. So we would suggest that now before this court is a statute that says personal assistance in persecution.
What would someone have to do who was in his position that he didn't do that would be personally involved, in your view? You understand my question?
I do, Your Honor. And I think that you would have to assess that based upon the Fedorenko court's decision. Fedorenko has set down the proposition that armed camp guard service constitutes assistance in persecution within the meaning of the Displaced Persons Act. That was a Supreme Court case. However, it said there's a continuum of conduct which may create harder line-drawing problems in cases with different conduct. This court said armed camp guard service in those cases constituted assistance in persecution, and those were based upon the standard duties of guarding, and which is exactly what my client was involved in. My client, the government has not shown any specific act. They haven't shown that he pointed his gun. They haven't shown that he shot his gun. They haven't shown that he even spoke to a prisoner. They haven't shown that he laid a hand on a prisoner. Nothing like that. And we would suggest that something more than the conduct in that line of cases of Shellong, Kuhl, Karras, and Schmidt would be required under the definition of personal assistance in persecution, because the plain meaning requires it.
What does the evidence show that your client did do? As I understand the record, he stood guard at the killing pits.
He did.
While others did the killing.
Well, the record doesn't establish where exactly my client was with regard to what happened at Troniki, I think Your Honor is referring to. All the record shows is that he continued to be a person that operated as a camp guard, that simply, and the role of a camp guard was to prevent prisoners from escaping. And it's very important that the Supreme Court also said in Fedorenko, the court has to focus on the individual conduct of the in this case, the appellant. We have to focus on the conduct and not let the judgment of the court be clouded by the terrible and horrific things that happened at Troniki. No one disputes these things were horrible. My client thinks these things were horrible. But what they've established is that he was there. They didn't establish that he took any act towards any person. He was simply there, and they haven't even established his proximity.
I thought they established that he did, in fact, guard the killing pits to prevent prisoners from escaping while others did the shooting.
Your Honor,
of people who were gathered into the
We would submit that the record is actually ambiguous on exactly where he was. The orders for the group were to stand guard and to shoot in the event that people were trying to escape. But the government does not establish exactly where he was. But even, I guess my point is, Your Honor, the fact that he was closer in proximity to the pits shouldn't change this court's analysis of the issue, because there is the bottom line is that he was still acting as a camp guard with the purpose of preventing people from escaping, no different than a tower guard on the perimeter who keeps people from escaping.
Why isn't that personal assistance in the same way that, you know, sitting in the getaway car at a bank robbery is aiding and abetting for purposes of criminal liability?
Because based upon the line of cases, as I've in Shellong and Schmidt, that line of cases, I would respectfully submit that this court has said more would be required. Again, more involvement would be required. And since this court's determined in those cases that standing guard constitutes assistance in persecution, and the plain meaning of the words personal assistance in persecutions is understood commonly to mean some higher level of responsibility.
Yeah, that's where you lose me. He assisted in this persecution personally rather than indirectly or by proxy. Right. If he wasn't standing guard personally, what was he doing?
Well, Your Honor, we would submit then that if that's the way the court would interpret personal assistance, then the same conclusion would be rendered just strictly by use of the word assistance. Any form of assistance requires personal action.
Sending money to the Nazi Party would not be personal assistance under that definition. Suggesting that your son go and enlist in the SS would not be personal assistance under that definition. But going yourself, well, if that's not personal assistance, what is?
Then my question would be, how would the court distinguish between personal assistance and assistance which was required?
I just gave you two examples. Doesn't take much effort to give more.
Well, again, Your Honor, I think that the plain meaning of the word requires a higher level of involvement and responsibility in order to constitute personal assistance and persecution. And we believe that's the reason that Congress inserted the words personal into the Refugee Relief Act. United, in the case of Lalaikas, in that court observed that it is historically plausible that Congress inserted the word personal into the statute for the purpose of narrowing the scope of people who would be found inadmissible under the Refugee Relief Act as opposed to the Displaced Persons Act. So we believe that that is a proper expression of what congressional intent was as it relates to the reason for inserting the word personal into the statute.
Now, I think it's the Eighth Circuit that has interpreted the term personal assistance in the statute to draw a distinction between mere membership in a group and actual performance of a duty. What's wrong with that interpretation?
Because I think you're referring to the Friedrich case, Your Honor. We respectfully disagree with that interpretation because Congress achieved that goal by simply removing the entire clause in the Displaced Persons Act, which said membership in a group is no longer going to be grounds for inadmissibility. They removed the entire clause, which is known as the movement hostile clause. And then to suggest that they then inserted the word personal for the purpose of emphasizing the fact that they've removed the whole clause, to me, I would respectfully submit, is superfluous and would not be the reason that they did that. I see that my time has expired. Reserved for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rogers. Mr. Paskey.
May it please the Court, my name is Stephen Paskey. I represent the United States. The Refugee Relief Act provided that a visa shall not be issued to any person who personally assisted in persecution. Every court to consider that issue to date, including the District Court below, the Eighth Circuit in Friedrich, and the District Courts in Friedrich and Hansel, has concluded that the meaning of those words is plain and unambiguous, and that under the plain and unambiguous meaning of those words, a person who served as a concentration camp guard, who individually stood guard, was not eligible for an RRA visa. The word personally means referring, belonging, or relating to a particular individual. The word assisted means to give help or aid or support. When those words are applied to the facts that are admitted by Mr. Kumpf, it is clear that he personally assisted in persecution.
Was it, in adding this personal assistance, was this a narrowing of the statute as far as you're concerned?
In Lalakis, the court suggested that it was plausible that Congress intended to narrow the standard under the Displaced Persons Act. We don't disagree with that, Your Honor. The court did narrow the standard. But what the court did, as the district court suggests below, when Congress enacted the RRA, it made two changes. First, it eliminated the movement hostile provision of the DPA, which provided for a person to be barred solely on the basis of a membership in a group. And I would emphasize that under the DPA, a person who was a guard at a concentration camp was separately barred on two grounds. First, because he assisted in persecution, and second, because he was a member of a Death's Head guard battalion at a concentration camp. Congress, when it enacted the RRA, it eliminated that provision based solely on membership.
Is that the distinction,
and
then, mere membership?
That is the distinction. As the district court said below, personally was added to emphasize that under the RRA, you could not bar someone simply based on membership. Going back to the facts that were admitted by Mr. Kumpf, he admits that he served as a guard at Sachsenhausen concentration camp for a year. He admits that he stood guard in the guard towers on a daily basis. He admits that he was armed, that he watched for prisoners attempting to escape, that he was instructed to prevent such escapes by shooting the prisoners if necessary. He admits that he was sent from Sachsenhausen to the Travniki labor camp. On November 3, 1943, 8,000 Jewish men, women, and children were shot to death in pits at the Travniki labor camp. Mr. Kumpf admits that he arrived no later than the day after, early on the morning after those shootings, that he stood guard the day after those shootings, that on that day when he stood guard at Travniki, some of the people in the pits were, in his words, still halfway alive, and that while he was standing guard that day, he was instructed that if he saw someone trying to escape, that he should, in his words, shoot them to kill. As the district court emphasized, Mr. Kumpf was not simply a member of a unit that assisted in persecution. He personally stood guard in the towers at Sachsenhausen and near the killing pits at Travniki. He personally was armed. He personally watched for prisoners trying to escape. He personally helped to ensure that prisoners could not escape from Nazi brutality. And by doing these things, he personally assisted in persecution. In support of his appeal, Kampf has made various arguments, none of which have merit. Those issues are fully addressed in the government's brief, and I will not address them further here unless the court has questions. I would emphasize, though, that the respondent in his brief, the appellant in his brief, has raised some questions about the opinions of consular officials. And I would note that immigration policy is not made by consular officials at a desk in Europe. It is made by Congress. And as the district court stated below, and as the courts have stated in Friedrich Consul, when Congress enacts a statute that is plain and unambiguous, consular officials are legally bound to enforce the statute as written by Congress. And if they do not do so, their actions are ultra vires and are not entitled to deference. Because the meaning of the statute is plain and unambiguous, this court's only function is to enforce the statute according to the terms used by Congress. Accordingly, the court should conclude that Mr. Kampf personally assisted in persecution, that he was not eligible for an RRA visa, that he was not lawfully admitted to the United States, and that he did not meet the requirements for citizenship. For these reasons, his naturalized citizenship was illegally procured and must be revoked. Thank you.
Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement. Our next case.